This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now is your chance. Well, that was it. It's over.
Did you do it? Have you achieved what you wanted? No?
Good morning, Night Vale.
Hey, it's me, Meg Bashwiner, coming to you live from my house that does not have heat right now.
And me, Symphony Sanders, who's coming to you live from my house where I haven't been for 2 months.
And it's me, Hal Loveland, coming to you from my home where we have heat but don't use it because it's Southern California. We just turn it off and it's fine. Believe me. Anyway, this is Good Morning Night Vale, the show where we discuss.
We discuss.
God damn it.
I want to discuss.
I swear I've never had a drink in my life. This is Good Morning Night Vale, the show where the...
God. Yeah, they know so what it is, Hal. This is episode ones. 52.
No, you don't know. This is Good Morning Night Vale. I had a great joke here. The show where we discuss HVAC problems and solutions. And also, welcome to Night Vale, the podcast on which we are all cast members. And we've been listening to it from the beginning, a good hard re-listen, and episode by episode. We are walking you through inside baseball style.
And this episode's description is, Mayor Pamela Winchell enjoys her retirement from politics, but she's being offered a new job. Plus, renovations at the bowling alley, updates from the desert otherworld, and a review of the new restaurant, Tourniquet. Let's talk about it!
Retirement, huh?
Yeah.
It's not going great.
Does anybody really ever retire these days? Let's be honest.
Yeah, no.
Sorry, I just looked up at the Google Hangout to see you, Meg, and it's like the best photo.
Because I am dressed like a Russian aristocrat who had to flee her country.
And so now, you are Anastasia.
It's cold in here, guys.
And you know where else it's cold? Out there for Pamela Winchell. She's having a tough time. And I understand that. You've been doing all you can, you know, going on crazy rants and whatnot, being the mayor for so long. Who knows how long she was mayor, you know? And then all of a sudden you're not the mayor anymore. And I mean, technically you're not supposed to call emergency press conferences, but she sure does, like, all the time.
Yeah. I love how this whole episode is sort of a statement or study of what it means to move on in your life. Obviously, you know, the story of Pamela Winchell refusing to relinquish made her mayor. But when it's given to her as sort of a special appointment, she doesn't want that because it would mean recognizing that she has moved into another part of her life. I think – and at the end they sort of discuss this, not to jump around too much, but that idea that – I think everybody holds on to – we all have an image of ourselves that is frozen from some point in time. It's incredibly difficult to be present, which is why it's the thing I think we all have to work on the most, is how do you be present? For Pamela, it's recognizing she is not the mayor anymore and that if she wants to continue holding these emergency press conferences, she's going to have to do it by special appointment. And to accept that means, hey, I have moved on from this. This is a – I'm at a different point in my life now. You know, she's constantly in tears. She's in full denial. It's a hilarious episode, but a really kind of deep subject matter.
Well, so true. I think a lot of us experience that feeling of, you know, who you thought you were at one point and then having to go through some sort of change. A lot of people can't deal with that. And that's why we have therapy.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know?
When I left the Neo Futurist after 10 years, it was a lot like this.
Did you just keep going back?
I did, actually. I officially stopped my active time there in 2018, but I still, like, stayed on to mentor someone.
I know. I'm like, weren't you mentoring
I did the shows still. I was, like, still all the
still
way there.
Still a neo-futurist. Once a neo-futurist, always a neo-futurist, yeah, right?
But this last year, 2019, is my first year that I have not done the show in 10 years. Right? I didn't do the show this year. Did I? I don't think I did.
Yes, you did.
No.
Yeah, I swear I've seen pictures.
Over the summer?
I definitely did not do the show at all this year. I did my own one-woman show this year.
Oh, yeah.
That was like North. Neo Futures pieces. So I guess like sort of kind of. But yeah.
You tap danced.
Yeah. And you always got to be tap dancing. But yeah, so it's like, it's kind of like that after you like, you have this job and you have a purpose and you have this thing that you're good at. And then for whatever reason, you know, you need to, it's time to move on. Or you get ousted. Or actually, Pamela announced her retirement, right? I'm trying to remember like how that all went down.
At an emergency press conference.
Yeah, she was like, I'm retiring. We need to have an election. And then like all this happened.
But also, a lot of people make that decision. They go, I'm going to move on. I'm so excited. You spend however much time in a job or a position or whatever activity. And then you think, it's time for me to move on. I got to go. I can't wait. And then when it happens, you have regret because the extent to which we define ourselves by what we do. If I didn't have X, who would I be? Or just something you do. You know, I've had a job at the same company for 10 years. If that stopped tomorrow, I would feel a lot of different things about it. But part of it would be it would be such a personal culture shock to all of a sudden be out of it and not doing it anymore that you would kind of – I think I would be lost to a certain extent and go, well, this is – you know, I've had this routine. This is part of who I am as I show up here between these hours and I do this work. So when that disappears, even no matter how much you might think you want it, you have to adjust. And for her, obviously, her main thing was calling emergency press conferences, which is sort of the device she was throughout the entire series so far anyway.
Yeah, except now the emergency press conferences have escalated and they're outright dangerous and causing property damage and killing people. And intern Maureen dies again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She gets blown away. Literally.
Yeah. By the tornado that is Pamela. So yeah, it is this thing. And then, yeah. And Dana's trying to be like, hey, it's fine. You can still totally do this. Like you just have to kind of do it our way.
Dana seems overwhelmed.
Yeah. She's busy.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine that anytime you go into a new position that she wasn't running for mayors or anything. So she was just chosen, right? And like the city council and all the secret government stuff, like that's got to be overwhelming to learn. And also that she was sitting on like a throne. There's been lots of things where she's like, wearing like a weird pin or a cape or something like that. Every time they've mentioned her since she's gotten her mayorship, she's been wearing something weird. Is that part of it, you think?
Yeah, there's definitely like some sort of weird system that she's now become a part of that she was not, that definitely was never expected to become a part of, but now she's a part of it. And it's like kind of hush hush. And there's these changes. Some of them are like kind of broad stroke changes or subtle changes, but we still see them. Yeah, and we don't know exactly why. It's just kind of characterization that she is now involved in this city government system, which is, because it's Night Vale, tremendously strange and covert and...
Yeah, and who knows what the hell they're telling her about or have to inform her of because everything's so secret in Night Vale, you know? Like, she probably has a soft meat crown now.
Yeah.
Well, you know the thing when you become president and you have, like, your first briefing or even when you're president-elect?
Yeah, with the secret where, like, book or whatever.
Here are the 5 million things that are going on in the world that you didn't know about, and you kind of can't put the lid back on that box once it's been opened for you. So she's whatever changes she wants to make, and she's already obviously struggled with that, with trying to make these sweeping changes, is you are caught inside the system and that it is going to change you even if you are able to change it.
Right. Like when early on when she was like, I want to let people go in the dog park and dogs go in the dog park.
Yes.
And then like they whisked her away and then she came back and was like, no one can go in the dog park. You know what I mean? So
yeah, exactly.
all of these things that are being kept from us Nightvalians, she is now privy to. And that's got to be overwhelming for someone who especially didn't ask for it.
Yeah. And especially because it's Night Vale too. So it's like, it's not your normal small town. We're like, you're some normal small town mayor. It's like, you got like a couple ribbon cuttings, you go to the council meeting, you figure it out. But because it's Night Vale, there's so much like dark, deep conspiracy things that she's now involved in and privy to that it is, and like all like encompassing and otherworldly. Like it is, yeah. It's something that, like, I feel like most people could handle being the mayor of a small town.
Right.
You know, it's going to be some work, but it's not going to be like this thing where it's completely takes over your life and changes everything you know. But that's what the position is in Night Vale. And that was the position that Pamela held too. So it's like, we kind of have this before and after where we have Dana as the new mayor and we see her kind of adapting to all of the weirdness. And then we see like the damage of Pamela having been the mayor. So it's like, this is like the ghost of Christmas future for Dana, right?
This is exactly what you're going to, this is what you're going to become, young lady. And I've always said, I'm like, you know, I love Pamela Winchell because she's so crazy. Like, she's wacky, you know what I mean? Like, she does all sorts of weird stuff. Sometimes she just stares off into the distance, you know, or talks about birds or whatever. So that's, I always feel like she is confused about like where she is, what's going on, but maybe she's not confused. Like, she's just out of time or just like knows different things than we know.
Yeah.
So that I'm interested to see how that's going to develop with Dana if it changes her any further. Can we talk about the sponsorship of itching?
Yeah.
Please.
I feel like we should.
I am itching right now because I was bitten by a million mosquitoes when I was in Vietnam. But did it make you feel like you had to itch when he was talking about it? Maybe that was just my brain.
It didn't then, but it is now. Also because my faux fur hat is a little bit itchy that I'm wearing.
when you're in the small window in our little Google Hangout, you look like a living puff of smoke.
I'm a sentient patch of haze.
You're literally dead.
No, that's right. You're a sentient patch of haze. That's right. This is what... Now I know exactly what Deb looks like every time you go out on stage and perform those pieces. This is what I'll imagine. Right down to the red gloves. I wasn't itchy. I did get itchy just now when you were saying that. I got itchy in the back of my head. But when I was listening to it, I really enjoyed, like, this felt like the most abstract kind of meta ad they've done so far. Mm-hmm. I really appreciated it. It was a fun piece of comedy writing.
Yeah, because itching is something that everyone can relate to. Everyone has experienced that feeling. So the joke of like being like, oh, it can be fun, but mostly it won't. Because you're like, oh, right, it is. I mean, it is fun if it's easy to reach and things like that. You're like, ooh, let's get that, scratch that itch or whatever. But it's not fun. It can be very uncomfortable. Have you ever had an itch when you're not supposed to? Like when your nails are drying.
When it's forbidden.
Or just in public in a weird place and you're like, I probably shouldn't scratch my bum in front of like these thousands of people.
Not my bum, but yes.
Yeah, all over.
If you see me walking like I just like a cowboy, like I just got off a horse, I'm trying to get something scratched as I walk.
Yeah.
No, yeah. That's why we walk like that, everybody.
Itchiness is a pain response.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's a level of pain.
Well, I must be in pain all the time because I feel itchy like a lot. I get itchy by looking at like when I see bugs. I'm not kidding. I know that's crazy, but like I get itchy when I see bugs. Sometimes like when my hair brushes part of my shoulder or like somewhere weird, I get like
a little tickle and then it's you have to itch it. Yeah.
Am I a weirdo?
No, you're not a weirdo.
Have you ever itched your head in thought pensively? Or is that, you know, obviously they're playing off a trope there. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody actually go, with their one finger on their temple. Have either of you ever done that? Because I've definitely have not.
No, I usually scratch my head because of my weave.
I scratch my hair because my hair is dirty because I'm trying to maintain my color and my teasingness so I can make my hair into a bouffant for my live show look. So my hair is always some degree of like horribly dirty and full of dry shampoo and it's itchy. Not anymore. Well, not when I'm on that. When I'm not on the road, it's not. But when I'm on the road, it's like there's always just like a cloud of white dry shampoo, and it's just like incredibly itchy.
Well, you're free until March, babe.
I know. Oh my gosh.
I just realized with the gloves, you remind me of Clark Griswold in Christmas Vacation when he's watching the home movies in the attic.
This is my outfit that I, just to really paint the picture to the listening audience, I'm wearing a faux fur coat that is black and white. And I'm wearing red leather gloves and a puffy white hat. I call this my Cruella de Vil outfit.
It's very Cruella. Oh,
yeah. I realized that one day when I was in the city of New York and I walked by a dog adoption event wearing this outfit. And I was like, oh my God, puppies. And then they all looked at me, like all the people working at the dog adoption event looked at me and they were like, oh no, we can't. And then they realized that I wasn't actually Cruella de Vil, but like they had that a response because I was in fact like rubbing my red bloody gloves together in my faux fur coat being like, puppies, puppies.
And you did have crazy eyes.
And a cigarette and a very long holder.
Yeah, and my hair was two-toned. I had it as just like half black and half white at the time. And I was looking for the puppies so that I could make them into a coat. And there happened to be 101 of them. So it was a good day.
But that's where the similarity stopped.
That's where the similarity stopped. Because I'm a, you know, I'm a vegan. I'm not. But I don't think I'd eat dog. I don't think I would eat dog.
I wouldn't.
But then, like, definitely it's like where you draw on the line, though. Like, right? Like, yeah, I wouldn't eat dog. I wouldn't eat horse. But then it's like, I wouldn't, you know, I eat pigs. And they're, you know, it's just really, it's just these arbitrary lines that we draw.
Yeah. I mean, you just draw. I sometimes don't draw. I would not eat a dog because I don't think they would taste very good.
That's true.
That's why?
I would eat you too, Hal.
How dare you?
I think you'd be delicious.
Yeah. I'm almost to the point, I've almost lost enough weight that I'm up to the point where I'd have a decent marble.
Or are you grass
finished? As opposed
finished?
To like too much fat.
We have to grass finish you.
Yeah, please. I'm like a Wagyu person. Mm. Very high quality.
You think there's good marbling? Baby. I mean, I've been, you know, mostly just eating a diet of acorns just to.
Yes.
Living like I'm Jamon Iberico over here.
I know. I was like, get some Iberico realness.
Yeah. I just eat acorns and pistachios and dates. And every once in a while, Joseph massages my haunches. he keeps talking about getting ready for spring, ready for spring. I'm not sure what for, but I feel ready.
Just don't let him sneak up behind you. That's all. Yeah. I don't know. I think I would taste okay. I've got a nice fat to muscle ratio, but I think maybe I'm a little too workhorsey.
You think you'd be a little like gristly because of your muscles?
Maybe. I think maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, gonna have to eat more. Eat more raw corn.
Yeah, I don't think I would taste good because all the times I accidentally lit cigarettes backwards and inhaled. You know.
Oh, I've totally done that.
You know, like that, or like the times where I like bite my nail polish off, like that's, you know, that's not gonna, it's gonna make for some bad tasting meat. And like all the hair dye, it like seeps in. Like there's no way. There's no way that this is gonna be tasting good. It definitely tastes like peroxide and nail polish and whatever's in cigarette filters.
Cyanide.
Probably peroxide and nail polish as well.
Mine would probably be like some sort of like CBD meat. I'm just an edible, guys.
How did we get here? Anyway, so speaking of restaurants, the Tourniquet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So Cecil didn't even like really, he ate there, but he.
I love that. He had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in the lobby.
But he didn't like eat any of their food, but their food is always, it like sounds weird anyway.
I can't think of a restaurant that I've like waited that long to get into. First of all, I don't know if I've gone to one that I've waited that long. If they were like, come back in 3 months, I'll be like, I'll be back. Never.
Yeah, no.
How about that? I could go to a million places, including a Houlihan's. It'll be fine.
See, but places like that, you would make an appointment before. Like, you're not going to drop. You don't just walk in to like a Michelin-starred restaurant usually. You make an appointment, and usually you also pay for your meal a lot of the times. Like,
you mean a reservation?
Yeah, like a food appointment. Like a food appointment.
I made a food appointment.
It's a chicken appointment.
I made a chicken appointment, and I ate at a Michelin star restaurant last weekend.
But you didn't just rock up to that, Hal. You weren't just like, I'll take one. And they were like, yes, sir.
We made a reservation the day before, so it was not that bad. probably helped that it was Thanksgiving weekend, but I, you know, it was good.
I would hope so.
I don't know that it was like, listen.
How many stars was this? Is it just one star to Michelin?
I think it was a one star. Well, he's a Michelin star. It's Bizarre, which is Jose Andreas.
Oh, I love Jose Andreas. He does good things.
It was fine. The chicken with mustard was fantastic. That was the best thing on the menu that I had. It's tapas, so it's small plates.
Okay.
Everyone leaves hungry and drunk.
Everything was good. Yeah, nothing was terrible. And then they have like a dessert bar, like a pastry bar with like 88 different items or whatever.
How many of them did you eat?
Yeah, I could fuck that up.
Well, I this is what I did. I was like, listen, it's a holiday weekend. I can play it a little bit looser with the diet I'm on. But I also thought to myself, this is going to have to be a very good dessert to woo me off of my diet. Because I can go to sleep after this and then wake up and eat whatever the hell I want. And I went to the bar, I have to tell you, not impressed. Most fancy desserts are not very good desserts.
Okay.
Because let me break it down. Forget this podcast we're covering. Let me break down desserts.
Please.
The thing I know the best. They get too cute with it. So it becomes form over function. So it might be lovely or made with some interesting combination of flavors, but it's not a good dessert. Mm. It's just a fascinating dish.
Putting a hat on a hat, you know?
Yeah. I had an olive oil cake at an Italian restaurant. The rest of the food there was very good. We were having a discussion about, like, should we go somewhere else for dessert or go here? I took a look at it, and I can say with – one of the things I will say I'm very good at, maybe the best at, is ordering dessert. And I can look at a dessert menu and tell you if there's anything good on it. I know.
You can tell.
I just know. I look at it. Yeah, they decide to get the olive oil cake. I was like, I don't see anything here that's outstanding. This is probably the best thing on the menu. You eat it and you think, if this was made with anything other than olive oil, it would be good. But it tastes like olive oil. You have an olive oil aftertaste. If you put cinnamon ice cream on it, it's very good. But then the cinnamon ice cream kind of covers everything, but you still have the aftertaste. I was 100% right. I have a 42 plus year streak of ordering the right dessert everywhere I go.
I have to agree with you, Hal, that a lot of times, depends on the restaurant, but a lot of times dessert sometimes is an afterthought or it's over, yes. it's too much of a thought, it's overwrought, you're bringing sand to the beach there. A lot of times I think the best dessert is just a handful of peanut butter M&Ms.
This is correct. Peanut M&Ms for me, but...
I like the butter. I can't be bothered to make the peanuts into the butter in my mouth. I have to have it pre-buttered.
You get to make it into peanut butter in your mouth. You get to be your own mortar and pestle.
And boy, am I. Yeah. So I wonder what kind of desserts they serve at the tourniquet.
Probably somebody with a shoe in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Served in another shoe.
For dessert.
steak salad.
Some other things that were going on in this episode were Strex Corp. We heard from them again, but it's just a bunch of angels, and I say that in quotation marks. Which, by the way, I love Cecil's little impersonation of Mark Evan Jackson. Whatever.
Everybody has one.
That was good.
Angels might like to bowl. Who doesn't like to bowl?
Well... I think
I like it.
I like it okay, but I can't do it with my nails anymore because I can't risk one snapping, you know?
Yeah, you just don't put your fingers in the holes then.
I know. I just got a granny bowl.
Yeah.
Just toss it between my legs. Or bumper bowling. I could do that.
Could do the bumper bowling. Or you could just be there in the shoes.
Like I did when we were in Asbury.
At the Asbury Lanes. You were just there to cheer us all on.
Yeah, and do the splits.
I bowled Joseph, Jeffrey, and I, the three of us, bowled a game at the Asbury Lanes in Asbury Park. And for the first 9 frames, I believe, no, it was the first 8 frames, Jeffrey maybe knocked down like 3 or 4 pins. And then the last 2 frames, which became 3 frames because he got a strike on every single ball he threw after that.
He beat us.
He pool sharked us.
I have that on video.
Yeah, Joseph and I were like doing like pretty bad, but still like passable. Like it was like there was a contest happening and Jeffrey was like way, way, way down in the game. And then he came out of nowhere and just started the last like 2 frames plus the extra frame that you get when you throw a strike on your last frame. And he beat us. He like learned how to bowl in the course of 1 game.
I want to see that video. Should that be a Patreon exclusive?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
Symphony's got
it. Yeah, I have it.
Somewhere. And if she doesn't, well, you can use your imagination.
It's a in the cloud.
It's in the it's hidden in the cloud.
It's in the cloud somewhere. Oh, the Desert Flower Bowling Alley. They're just, you got to pave over lane 5 or block it up.
I don't think you can keep them down, though, you know.
Well, yeah. I know, but you could try. I mean, you got to come with solutions, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're like, plug it up.
Speaking of solutions, this episode has a staggeringly weird solution where we go into the notebook. The big boy journalist notebook, and we find out because we get to the, it's like, okay, where everything's back to normal. We don't know how we got there. And then Cecil just apparently has this notebook that he writes everything down in. And then we go in there and it's like this weird stuff about the man in the tan jacket.
Love his return. Good use of the man in the tan jacket returning.
That is such a great device. Cause then you're like, well, you don't remember anything that happened.
Yeah.
Because this guy comes by.
It is the ultimate, it is on the one hand the ultimate cop-out. It can seem like that, but it also is, this is a really fun way to bring him back in.
Yeah.
And kind of, it sort of furthers his kind of legend. So it's not a cop. It may appear to be a cop-out, but it's not. It's more of a furthering of the man in the tan jacket than anything else.
Yeah. It also makes me wonder what else is in Cecil's notebook.
Doodles.
Yeah. I don't think it's anything of substance.
Shopping list.
I don't know. I feel like there's the great secrets of all of Night Vale are in that notebook.
But how do you think he actually goes back and looks at it?
No. Unless he has to in a situation like this.
And do you think there's multiples? Do you know what I mean? Because how big is the notebook?
Well, it's magical.
Oh, we've decided it's magical?
I've decided it's magical.
Oh, okay. It's like never ending. There's always pages.
It's had it since the prophecy foretold he would become the radio host.
Yeah.
You ever find old notebooks of yours and you're like, God, I was such a fucking moron.
No, I don't write things down.
I do.
You're just like, why would I ever think this is important? Why would I ever think anything's important, you know?
I always enjoy it. I still have my senior year binder that I carried around everywhere. I have it somewhere here, I think. I could look through it and tell you what my senior year schedule was, where I had to be second semester, where my free periods were.
That's got to be good to have in handy for when you have nightmares about where you need to be.
Yeah. I sleep holding that just in case I need to invoke it in the world of dreams.
Yeah.
That's why I kept it. I mean, I'm no idiot. I was born in the night, but not last night.
Oh.
Oh. Whoa. Oh. Ayo.
Are you guys feeling ready to talk about the weather? Because the weather in upstate New York right now is probably like 28 degrees, maybe with some light snow.
Would you say it's frightful?
Yeah, I would say that it's frightful and that my boiler not working well is not delightful.
It's not delightful, but a fire would be delightful.
Yeah, but I don't have any more firewood.
But you don't have anywhere else to go, so let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
I shoveled a foot of snow out of my driveway on Tuesday. My back still really hurts. Ugh. I'm not ready, you guys. I'm not tough. Kinda. I used to be tough. I'm not tough anymore. I spend two winters in Los Angeles, and all of a sudden I'm like, you know, in a fur coat in my home.
Well, that's just because the heat's not working.
No, it's not. It's probably actually, it's not that bad. I'd probably say it's about 50 in my office right now.
But that's not a comfortable inside degree.
No, it's not. No.
Like, I think the closest you could get with a comfortable inside degree has to be mid-60s.
Yeah.
I don't think you can go lower than that and be like, oh, yeah, I can just walk around unsheathed.
It gets uncomfortable.
Yeah. My plan is just to get in the shower. My hot water still works. So just, like, get in the shower, like, really poach myself into the flannel pajamas, into the flannel sheets, and then hopefully I just fall asleep.
There you go. That's a good strategy.
Yeah.
That's a good coping strategy. It's solid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get a pile going of blankies.
And I'll say, as an insider in my relationship, Joseph Fink is warm. He runs hot. He's like a little furnace.
Yeah.
So you can gather close.
He gets mad at me, though, because I'm not, I have pretty bad circulation. So he likes to scream at me, ice witch, you're an ice witch. You're an ice sculpture that was brought to life by a witch's curse.
Is your romance story Mannequin?
Yeah. So our romance story is Mannequin because I'm an ice sculpture that was brought to life by a witch's curse.
Yeah. And
Joseph Fink is to keep me warm.
My wife, her legs run really hot. Sometimes her feet are cold. I don't care. I'm pretty inured to cold things. Like if she puts her feet on my legs, I don't really mind that much.
You're not going to scream ice witch in her face?
No, her legs get really hot and I call them fire sticks. I say, get those fire sticks away from me.
That's so interesting. Her legs are hot, but her feet get cold?
Sometimes. It's because all the heat is being stored up in her legs.
That's so weird.
I think like mid-calf, all of a sudden it becomes...
Mid-calf.
It's what mid-calf, just shuts down.
Lower,
just
shuts down. Or high ankle. It just shuts down like, this is where the cold is. You know, warm heart.
Oh.
All right, well, let's talk about the weather, which is Here I Land by Nicholas Stevenson.
What a bopper.
What a bop. What a beep, yeah. A bop, a beep, a bop.
It was.
Beep, a bop, a boop.
Would you say it's a rock tune?
Like a romp?
Rock tune. Like it's a rockin'.
Yeah, it's a rock tune.
It's like indie rock. I'd say he's indie rock.
Rock-ish.
He's an illustrator. That's a lot of what he does, is that he's a UK-based illustrator.
How he be doing music then?
He also be doing music. I feel like he'd be doing more illustrations lately than the music, but he's probably still out there making it happen.
So he's a Renaissance person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He fucks with illustrating, but he also fucks with...
musics.
With musics.
Yeah, he's a creative, as they like to say. When That's cool. People who are trying to monetize your art, they call you creative. So he's a creative. Oh.
Or a maker.
Maker.
I think that's such a funny term. But yeah, that's neat. Nicholas, is it a one person?
Yes. He does work with a band now and again that I can't remember the name of. But I can kindly direct you to your local internet to learn more about him, his music, and his illustrations.
Google's a mofo. When I initially saw his name, Nicholas Stevenson, I misread it as Noel Stevenson.
Like, oh, the illustrator.
The illustrator.
Yeah.
I know.
Also an illustrator, yeah.
And that's why I was like, huh. And then I was like, oh, no, it's just Nicholas, not the same person. So that's what's in my brain.
Shout out to Noel Stevenson.
Whoop, whoop.
lots of great art made over there. My nephew has just gotten into Lumberjanes, and it's very adorable.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. On that note, let's not go into the auto zone. Let's not go into the bone zone because we're all just friends. Let's go to the fan zone.
Fan zone!
Stay right there. Good Morning Night Vale will return after a brief break.
I want to start out the fan zone with a special birthday shout out.
Birthday!
To Q40A.
Yeah, Q.
Woo!
Yeah, Q is a patron supporter of both Night Vale and Good Morning Night Vale, and a really lovely person. And Sean, Q's friend, emailed and asked if we could make sure that we wished a happy birthday. So we are doing it. We wish Q a very happy birthday, and we wish that your birthday calzone is a good calzone.
Yes, have a good birthday, Calzone.
Q.
Yeah, Q's awesome. Also, I see Q a lot out here in L.A. He's constantly, I think he's from or lives in Northern California, but he's always down here going to shows, and he's everywhere you want to be. Q is everywhere you want to be, and he's a super cool dude, very generous dude. So he deserves all your well wishes. Go find him.
Yeah.
Go find him out there on social media.
I have his address, so I could go physically find him. But I'm not going to do that.
We're coming to your house, Q.
We will come. We're going to knock down your door and say hi, do a couple of things, but just a few. Everything else will be fine, and then we'll leave, and you'll know we were there.
We'll leave behind a calzone.
That'll be what starts the fire. It was too hot. We're sorry. We didn't mean to do that.
Yeah.
You know how bad cheese can burn. Okay. happy birthday, Q. All right. I wanted to, like, this is the fan zone, but also this section seems to be what I'm calling the Children's Fun Fact Science Corner, where we hear from Els. And Els is the scientist who emailed us about time.gov.
Remember? Hell yeah.
We had a riveting conversation that, but we heard from Els again, and I would just like to share that email. So, good morning, Night Vale. As requested, identifying myself, I'm an assistant professor at the University of New Hampshire. You can find the science speak version of what I do at my website. And then Els provided a website, which we can all go to. I can share that another place. I don't know. I'm not going to like spell out a website like I'm a person doing a podcast ad. Anyway, okay. The fun way of talking about it is that I'm working on manipulating the shapes of nuclei into tiny nuclear donuts and yes. nuclear peanuts, which I will shoot with a 5-mile-long oval-shaped lightning bolt the width of a human hair to learn more about why nuclei are stable, what? AKA a very small part of the much bigger question, how do we exist? We make nuclear peanuts and donuts by shooting high-frequency microwaves from a 9-foot-tall robot through a golden tube aimed at frozen solid toxic gas that sits in a bath of liquid helium held at 1 degree above absolute zero, colder than the deepest, darkest regions of outer space, which is still slightly warm due to the cooling embers of the Big Bang. And all of this sits inside a magnetic field that's about half as strong as needed for levitating a frog.
The fuck?
What?
Exactly. Exactly. That can be your job. This is not
Y'all, this is just some commentary.
What?
That can be your job. Like, you're just a person who thinks about this stuff. And, like, this, I'm just.
I want a 9-foot-tall robot.
I want to be near something that is a 1 degree above absolute zero.
That's fucking crazy.
It just seems so cool. And then Alice continues, although I've wanted to, I've yet to be able to make it to a live show, and especially for a chance at a science lunch chat at Applebee's with the folks behind my favorite show. I'm definitely going to be on the next one that's close by. Well, good news, Alice, we're doing a show in Portsmouth, New Hampshire in March, so we'll see you there.
Should I come out for that one?
Well, Al, you know, we'd always love to have you. So, if we're going to facilitate this science conversation, then...
That's what I mean.
I feel like we need to get serious. Yeah.
Can we use the frog levitating machine?
Can we see the nuclear donuts? And the nuclear peanuts? We like snacks. we'll bring actual donuts and peanuts. So if y'all are ever traveling between Boston and Portland and want to make a pit stop in southern New Hampshire, we're going to do a show there. Hang on. I also could give you a tour of the lab. There are no tarantulas, though I warn you, the best way to get a scientist is to never shut up about their research. So here we are.
I love scientists.
Okay. And then Else continues on. Now let's see if I get the timing on this right. I think you'll be on episodes 52, 53-ish for this letter. You're right. Even with all of the Strex storyline and building of the early love beforehand, these episodes that follow got me more invested in Cecil and Carlos's relationship more than any other fictional couple as they deal with the challenges of being apart from one another. I was so worried for them when these first aired. Every time Cecil mentions Earl, especially here after clearly missing Carlos since he's so far away, I'm like, Cecil, no, I know it's hard, but your true love is in the desert looking at weird cacti and thinking of you. You can get through this. Please get through this. That's in all caps. I'm also right there with Symphony when when Carlos mentions Doug a few episodes later. Who's Doug, Carlos? Who's Doug? This is again in all caps. The desert otherworld is not more scientifically interesting than the love of your life. Ahem. Spoilers. I was also so incredibly relieved when they got through this. Their beautiful love fills my queer heart, but wow, even on a re-listen, this whole arc just tears on my heartstrings more than Hunt a Car Tour of the Universe. Peace and rainbows, Els. P.S. Meg, I'm glad you're on Team Atomic Time. Anytime. PPS, while writing this, episode 53 started playing, and Hal, I absolutely love your monologue in this episode, and it got me all on board for Team Carlsberg. Poor Steve, heartbreak. I'm so glad that Cecil eventually got over his issues, and their familial love is now so beautiful. Truly, we have all been scientists at one point or another in our lives.
Holy shit. I love you, Els.
We all love you.
Yeah.
This is the Children's Fun Fact Science Corner, and we appreciate you.
Even if I'm not in the show, I'm just coming out there to hang out when you're there.
Yeah.
I'm doing it.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Just continue to blow our tiny minds with all of your science, and we appreciate your fan theories and thoughts.
I mean, levitating a frog, bro.
Frog levitation.
What?
Yeah. That's sick. What else can we levitate?
Can I be levitated by a nuclear donut?
Can you please levitate Symphony with a nuclear donut?
Or peanut?
Symphony, I will say, we received for the next two letters that you're going to be doing, there are two of them in there.
Okay.
There was quite a bit of a strong response in our email inbox about the vaginal steaming that we talked about in the previous episode.
So I thought that was just, I could just like throw that away and like whatever. It just goes into the world of podcasting stuff and no one ever talks about it again. But like it was made such a big deal of and people have been like tweeting at me. I love it. Okay. Anyway, here we go. Hello, Hal, Meg, but especially Symphony. I did not want anyone to feel left out, but I am writing specifically because of what Symphony said in your last episode, Good Morning Rumbling. The crew got off on a tangent about vaginal steaming, a.k.a. the V-steam, after Symphony mentioned her experiences with it at King Spa. I nearly had to pull over while driving when the subject came up. Not out of shock, but familiarity. Symphony, I am a Chicago local. Burps, but it still counts. Sure. And frequent King Spa whenever I have a free day. Same, same. Best place to relax and do some self-care while indulging in a semi-nudist colony vibe. When you go, please, please, for the sake of your lady bits, skip the V-steam.
Oh.
I'm not trying to take agency over what you do with your body, but I'm attaching an article about why the process is not OBGYN recommended. Instead, spend your money on the scrub, massage, facial, or some extra kimchi fried rice. I fucking love that shit. As the doctor in the article states, your vagina is self-cleaning oven. No need for V-steam. And an article is attached. On a somewhat related note, I hope to run into you someday in the salt room. It's my favorite. I promise to only moderately fangirl about relaxing with the voice of the leader of my favorite literacy-based militia group. Love the show overall, morning crew. Your banter is a fun part of my day, and I always love getting recipe ideas from the foods you discuss. Not to mention the whole being a huge Night Vale fan. Reliving the series from an analytical perspective has been a treat, and I'm loving the journey. Looking forward to seeing the show in March in Chicago. Elaine. Okay, thank you, Elaine. And I appreciate the backup article because, you know, the proof is in the pudding. I know my vagina is self-cleaning, as are most. But, you know, we try things, you know? But, the body scrub is dope, and I will continue to get that. I hope to see you nude one day. See ya. Next up, from Sigrid. I'm saying that right? Right?
Yeah, sure.
Maybe.
Okay. I would say it.
Hi, longtime listener and fan here, who just couldn't help but feel worried after your last episode. Please don't recommend or do vaginal steaming. It's bad, like really bad, and potentially dangerous. A woman suffered second-degree burns after doing it. Yikes.
Well, that's a BBC article attached right there.
Or just Google vaginal steaming burns for more sources. Love you guys. So I really wouldn't want you to get second-degree burns anywhere, but especially not on your vulva, which sounds extra horrible. Ouch. Best regards. Yeah, no, I would not want a second-degree burn on my vulva either. I try things, and I tried this thing, and I probably, who knows? It was fine. I didn't get burned. It was fine. But I won't do it anymore.
Willing to commit? Yeah, I was going to say, are you willing to commit right now that you will not steam your vagina anymore?
I will
be. Are you willing to make that commitment?
I'm going to make that commitment to not
to yourself, steam. Not to anybody else.
Yeah. I mean, it was not really like affecting my life one way or the other. I tried it because it was a thing to do. And it was only $30, so I did it. And, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow was like, yeah, steam your vagina. And I was like, whatever. You steam your clothes, why not steam your vagina? And then... but you know what? I get it. And I won't... And I am not... I will read those articles, and then I will... I like to keep my vagina safe. Or my vulva safe.
I'll say this. Until Gwyneth Paltrow has a doctor in front of her name and an MD after it.
Look.
We take no medical advice from her.
I'm not taking medical advice. Goop. I was just like, oh, that sounds interesting. And they have it at this local thing. So I tried it.
She's naming her kid Apple. She's steaming her chotch. It's like a whole thing. I'm just very concerned.
Were we talking about this so that we don't think celebrities who name their kids weird stuff that that's their real name?
Yeah, we talked about this. I think that's not actually their real name. They just don't want the media to have their kid's name. So they just give like really some Stephanie. Sort of some fake fucked up weird name.
It's probably smart. Gwyneth Jr.
Yeah, it's probably just like Beth.
Gwyneth Jr. Steamy. Mick Steamy.
Thank you for everyone's concern, by the way.
People are super concerned about your yacht.
Like, believe me, she's great. She's great, guys.
Yeah.
Leave my choach alone.
Yeah.
Your zhuzh has to be taken care of.
She all right.
At all costs, protect your bodies, everybody.
Yeah. The whole top of the inbox when I went in this morning was just like,
oh, really?
I need to just talk to you about
to tell me, don't do
Symphony's
it.
Vagina. Like, to tell you not to do it yet. There was no pro-vaginal steaming.
There was no pro-vaginal. That's okay.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. It's fine.
We haven't touched on that part of the population, but they're out there.
They're out there somewhere.
Somebody loves it.
Yeah, they're icing their coups as we speak. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. They're in a Nordic dip. Stephen writes, "Dear Symphony, please don't ever see me vagina." No, that's not true. Stephen writes, "Good morning, Hal, Meg, and Symphony. I love the character and Will Wheaton and all of you and how often he has been on the show to cook with Cecil." I believe we're referring to Earl Harlan here, as of course. "I have wondered for a long time, though, if there's any interest in putting out a Night Vale cookbook by Earl, in quotations, and if so, which recipes from the show would you all like to see put in it?" None of the ones they mentioned for him personally. Are there any, all right, before I go on, are there any of these dishes that you would like to see in an actual cookbook? Like a practical cookbook.
Nothing from Tourniquet, but like, you know.
A hilarious cookbook would be fun.
I mean, you could do invisible pie.
That's what I had tonight. Oh. Don't steam your invisible pies either, everybody. Please. All pies. Also, what are some of your own personal favorite recipes that you may want to see put into the book if it was ever done? Like personal recipes? Things like we like? Is that what we're talking about now?
I think that's what Steven's trying to say to us.
Oh, so maybe then do the Flamin' Hot Cheetos wing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We should put out a cookbook. There should be a Good Morning Night Vale cookbook.
Yeah.
Of all the things that we like.
It's just a calzone cookbook, and it's all just different things you can put in a calzone.
I'm just going to put it out there. Coming 2022, the Good Morning Night Vale cookbook. I'm going to put it out in the world. This is me invoking the secret. We are going to have a cookbook.
By New York Times bestselling author Megan Bashwinner.
With any luck. Yeah. Let's just stare right at my vision board.
Yeah, put it on there. Good Morning Night Vale has been amazing, and you all are as well. I hope you have a wonderful day. All hail, Stephen.
All hail.
All hail.
All hail.
Thank you, Stephen, and thank you to everybody out there who takes the time to listen to Good Morning Night Vale. A special thanks to those of you who back us on Patreon. If you've not yet become a patron, give yourself the gift of bonus content and us the gift of increased backing at patreon.com/goodmorningnightvale. You can get all sorts of special bonus content. There are videos on there. There is a bonus episode on there or two, and another one that's coming up over the holiday break. That's right. We are taking a break after this episode. We will be back on Thursday, January 9th, which is my birthday, aka the greatest date in human history. Me and Jimmy Page, born on the same day. Coincidence? Yes. But we're going to be posting a special episode that we recorded when we were all here together in LA. It is a review of the debate. Find out all the fun behind the scenes info about that live show. The first time Hal met Meg, the first time Hal met Mara, the first time the Thrilling Adventure Hour really crossed over with Welcome to Night Vale as a bunch of us invaded the show for one night. It was really fun to discuss it. It's a really fun show. If you've not listened to it yet, you can go get that and listen to it and be prepared. And then become a backer at patreon.com/goodmorningnightvale. That's how you get all that sweet, sweet BC, which means bonus content.
Burned coochie.
And as always, yeah, that's right, which means burned coochie. Hey, everybody. I can't tell you what to do with your body, but I would suggest don't steam your vagina. But do have a good morning, Night Vale.
Good Morning, Night Vale is a Night Vale Presents production. It is hosted by Symphony Sanders, Hal Lublin, and Meg Bashwinner. It is edited by Grant Stort and mixed by Vincent Cascione. It is produced by Meg Bashwinner. Theme music by Disparition. Special thanks to our fans who submitted their thoughts this week. Leave us a voicemail at 929-277-2050 or email us at info@goodmorningnightvale.com to share your theories and ask questions or to jingle some of the way. This show is powered by our patrons like Sophie Whitledge, Reese, Chris Jones, Matthew Dettencourt, and Shadow Side. If you're interested in supporting the show in exchange for having your name mispronounced in our credits or hyper cool kid content like sneaky video clips from A Spy in the Desert, check us out at patreon.com/goodmorningnightvale. For more information on this show, go to goodmorningnightvale.com and follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at Nightvale Chat. Special thanks to Christy Gressman, Jeffrey Craner, Joseph Fink, and Adam Cecil. Today's adverb is steamingly. Sharing stories of controversial spa treatments can cause defenders of science to respond in a scorching and steamingly manner.
Hey, y'all, it's Jeffrey Craner. So I do another fiction podcast called Within the Wires, which are stories told through the guise of found audio. Each season is a separate tale. You want a prison escape told through relaxation tapes? That's season one. Want a love story that unfurls through voice messages only? Season five. How about the revelations of an unexplained death told through a series of museum audio guides? Season two. There are seven seasons of Within the Wires for you to binge right now, each only 10 episodes long. So go get Within the Wires wherever you get your podcasts. From